Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
All right, y'all, for the next 4 weeks, we are going to be talking about sex in lots of different ways with different guests from different angles. Everything in these interviews is Christ-centered because, spoiler alert, God created sex. But some of it may not necessarily be appropriate for young children, unless you're ready to field those questions. Some of the things we talk about are uncomfortable, of course, but all of my guests did such an incredible job of sharing honestly and openly and vulnerably, and I am so proud and so honored and so excited to step into this space and talk about it through a Christian lens, which I don't think gets done enough. So I'm so pumped to bring you the Let's Talk About Sex series from Confessions of a Crappy Christian. Welcome back to part two of the Let's Talk About Sex series. Our guest today is Kirsten Kelly, and y'all get ready to fall in love with her. Kirsten's story is one that I think a lot of us are going to relate to, and she has so much wisdom to share about married sex. We go in on purity culture and the fact that God created sex to be good and designed it for us. Hey, Kirsten, welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi, Blake.
I'm so pumped. So, like, anybody so that pumped. Saw the title of this episode knows that we're talking about sex today. So we're going to say that out front. If you don't want to listen to it in front of your kids, I understand.
Yep. We're going there.
Put your headphones in because it's going to be a good one. But I do, before we talk about something so like deeply personal, I do want to give the listeners a chance to get to know you a little bit. So,
sure.
Kirsten, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Yeah. I'm Kirsten Kelly. I am married. I have two girls. One is 4 and a half and one is almost 2. I grew up Christian. Sort of non-denom, some charismatic, you know, those types of settings. Super quick background. Walked away from God. God kept showing up. Knew that wasn't the answer to walk away because he kept showing up in such powerful ways that I was like, okay, this isn't the answer here. So, and in that process, I discovered how good and big and loving God is. So now I'm kind of in this process of figuring out how to reconcile the God that I have experienced with the God and his rules that I was taught about.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it just doesn't add up. Mm-hmm. So part of that being a huge part of that message or that learning being and deconstruction being sexuality. So mm-hmm. that's a huge part of my past and my history. So that's what I'm here to talk about today.
Yes. So a friend actually like sent you your direction on Instagram because she thought you would be a great guest. Shout out Stephanie. And she like loves your sacred sexuality series. And I'm so glad that she did because, I mean, you're essentially doing exactly what this podcast is about, which is like talking openly and freely and like shame free about something that like the Christian sphere struggles to talk about. I do think that like now in 2019, like people are trying. But I mean, it's hard. And then we have this weird, like, church upbringing baggage that we don't know what to do with. Exactly what you're saying. Like, we don't know how to reconcile the God of rules with the God who created sex to be a, like, fun thing, you know? So I think that people are hungry for this. I love that you're doing it. And I'm so excited to, like, share my platform and talk about this. Tell us a little bit about the series, the Sacred Sexuality series that you started on your Instagram and just the heart behind it, which I'm sure is a novel in itself. But tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I will try to keep it short. I do think people are hungry. They're hungry for to hear this stuff, and they're hungry for permission to say this stuff and to feel this stuff. So, to share the heart behind sacred sexuality, I do have to share a little bit of more of my story, if that's okay.
Oh, absolutely.
I come from a unique background in that I was raised in purity culture, which we are going to touch on later.
Yes, we are. We're
going
to try not to yell too much.
That's a doozy. So I was raised in purity culture, which is essentially, if you haven't heard this term, it's, you know, no sex, don't think about sex, don't talk about sex, don't do sex, don't have sex, don't do it until you're married. Just don't address it. And then, but once you're married, you're cool. You're in the free zone. Have at it. God made it.
Right.
Worship, you know, through it, you know, all that stuff. But I was left with a lot of wounds in my life that led me to kind of step away from that and search for ways to, instead of searching to God and within myself to fill those holes, I was looking outwardly to fill those holes. And I found attention from guys to be very effective in doing that, and which led to sex with those guys. It was a balm. It was a very soothing balm for those open wounds, at least in the immediate.
Mm-hmm.
It gave me the attention and affection that I wanted, and it got the job done. So I hung out in that lifestyle for a while, but I still carried shame in those actions because of the foundation that I was brought up in. So the interesting thing about shame is that anything that you hide is going to create shame because you're hiding it. And the fact that you cannot talk about it and bring it into light in itself creates the shame, right? Mm-hmm. So I was hiding this behavior, and which led me to lying about the behavior. And then continuing to make poor decisions because I was already hiding it. I was already living in shame. Why not continue doing it? But at 17, I wound up pregnant. I don't know if you know this part, Blake, but I did wind up pregnant, which is you don't think it's ever going to happen to you when you're a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
That happens to other people. But I was left with this huge decision. The guy that I was dating at the time was incredibly abusive and left me a shell of a person. Mm-hmm. I didn't have my own thoughts. I didn't have my own opinions. I defaulted to whatever he wanted to keep him around, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And he wanted to have an abortion. So I wound up having an abortion, which was, as you can only imagine, like the most horrible, painful situation that a woman can be in.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to, as a side note, if I had had one person to take my hand and look me in the eye and say, "You can do this. I will help you," it would have changed everything. I know. But there was no one to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So of course that only led to more guilt and more shame and more unhealthy decisions. Confused about my sexuality and what it was and who to give it to and, you know, just all of the things. So it took years and years and years, and this is a very short version. It took years and years and years to overcome that and heal through that. And, so I did wind up meeting my husband at church, and we wound up getting, you know, pursuing marriage. And I thought that was going to fix everything. I really did.
Right.
You think you get married and that person's going to be there for you and you get to have sex shame free and, you know, all the things.
Yep.
But anyone who's married know that it does not make things easier.
Mm-mm.
You know, marriage is the most beautiful relationship that there is, you know, that and children, because it refines you so much. It pulls everything out of you that needs to be pulled out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, it was our, the first 5 years of our marriage, sex was totally a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Our relationship was very tumultuous. Mm-hmm. We had a great relationship, and then there were two sides. You know, it was a mm-hmm. great relationship and a really hard, you know, cumbersome relationship because we were working through so many things.
Which I think that is such a good, like, pause solidarity moment. Like, if sex is a disaster in your marriage, you are not alone. Just because people aren't talking about it, like, that is the majority.
Yep.
So, like, hear 100%. Us say, if even today, if you've been married for 10 years and sex is still a disaster in your marriage, you're not alone.
We have been married 7 years, and this is our first year of great sex.
Yes! So, like, wait, what year did you get married?
2011.
Oh, wait, we got married in 12. So, yeah, this year is...
Oh, okay.
I think the end of this year is 7. And
yeah,
same.
We'll be on,
like,
8. Yeah.
We're just starting to, like...
Just getting the groove.
Hitting the groove. Have healthy conversations. Like, talk about it. But, like, getting to the point where, like, we have sex and then can, like, give mm-hmm. notes after. You're like, hey,
100%.
That was great. Do that every time.
Like, 100%.
That is so healthy. And it took us 7 years to, like, feel comfortable enough because we're not, like, nobody's talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
So, side note, you're not alone. Continue, Kirsten. Sorry.
Yes. And we're going to get into more of that in married sex because we're going to mm-hmm. talk about, like, in depth married sex too. But, So, and that was my next point, is that there's no resources. So we were going through all of this totally alone together with the, you know, we did some talk therapy together and marriage counseling and inner healing at church and, you know, things of that nature, but there's no books. There's no, like, step-by-step of here's what you do when this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very confusing and we just had to navigate it one day at a time, figuring out what the hell to do next. So all of that whole spiel to say my heart behind sacred sexuality is to catch the preteen or the teenager who is susceptible to heading down that path and helping them to not go down that direction.
But helping them without just saying don't have sex.
actually helping.
Having the conversation.
Yes. Exactly. The heart behind it is to help the people who are halfway down that path to change their trajectory,
mm-hmm.
To give them some tools. And the heart behind it is to help people who have been through the whole story, you know, or similar
mm-hmm.
story,
mm-hmm.
And help them get to a place of healing and compassion and self-love and understanding of who God is and who He made them to be. And the people who are in marriage and struggling with all of this. So it's really, and then to go on and have kids and to teach them, like I'm actually working on a program now for kids, how to raise your kids in a way from day one.
Yes.
Being sexually aware in a healthy way.
Yes.
And how to have those conversations.
Oh my gosh. So needed.
That is all to say that's the heart behind the sexuality.
Yes.
Sacred sexuality.
So good. So the story that you hear, like, over and over is of women who grew up in the church hearing one or both of these messages, either waiting until they got married or, like, being sexually active before. They think that marriage is going to be the quick fix. Exactly
right.
Like you said. That you exchange these vows, you wear this pretty dress, and then, like, boom, a switch flips, and you're, like, a freak in the sheets. And it's, like, it's this, like, seamless transition. And that is basically never the way that it goes.
I think I've had 3 people reach out in the entire series and say, it was just great for me. But that was 3 out of about 100 people that hundreds, actually, of people that reached out and said, oh my God, this is the hardest thing ever. So yes, it's very rare.
The interesting thing there too is that it was actually a pretty easy transition for me, but my husband struggled to go from sex is bad to sex is good.
Right.
So like, and that's enough. Like we're told that like men just like want to have sex 24/7 and we could completely exclude them from this conversation.
Right.
That transition into marriage can be difficult.
Right. I mean, so I think, yeah, We'll start with women, and then I think let's talk about men.
Yeah.
I think the most common thing that I've heard from women is that they struggle to feel free in once they get married and it's time to have sex. And there's not a freedom. There's a general non-desire because of their religious upbringing. And when we've been pounded, even in little micro messages, with the same message that sex is bad, sex is bad, sex is bad, ding, okay, sex is good.
Right.
It's not possible to just, that is brain chemistry that we're dealing with here. There's a retraining and a reconditioning required on how we perceive sex, you know? And you also, I was having this conversation in my girls' like group Bible study thing the other night. We're starting to have sex nights, which I love, where we just talk about sex.
Yes.
But we spend so much time in life. We study for, you know, school. We study topics that interest us. We learn about cooking. We learn about traveling. We learn, like, whatever we're interested in, we find resources on and learn about and dive into, right? Sex, we don't do that.
Mm-mm.
We don't invest time or mental energy or money or any of our resources that we have into learning about it and delving into it and thinking about it and meditating on it. But we expect to have this great, amazing sex life.
Yeah.
Right.
To like jump in and immediately be good at it.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I've even talked to people who had sex before marriage and it was amazing. Mm-hmm. Literally the same couple. They get married and everything just kind of falls
100%.
apart.
100%.
Yeah. I hear it all the time. And I think it's just because, I mean, A, that dynamic changes of like from, you know, being quote unquote bad to being good.
Mm-hmm.
The excitement level changes. So, but we need to start priming ourselves for, as soon as I started reading about sexuality and learning about how the body works and how the brain works and how just learning about it and having it on my mind alone increased my sex drive.
Yes.
It increased my desire to participate in the thing that I am learning about.
Yeah.
So I think we just have to start once we're, you know, if you're in a marriage and you're struggling with, oh man, well, why don't I want it? Well,
do you know anything about it?
Right. Have you looked up, you know, the parts of your body? Have you looked up what happens in arousal? Have you looked up how to, another really interesting topic, side note, is the, which maybe we can talk about this another day, but the components that create desire are completely washed out by the components of love. And that's I don't know if you know Esther Perel. If you want to start learning about sexuality, look up Esther Perel's blog and find her on Instagram. She's amazing. But so I started learning about, okay, well, why is my desire gone? Just because love is present in my marriage, why should desire have to be non-existent? So anyway.
No, that's so good.
About learning about our bodies. Did you know that? Women, when we have an orgasm, it completely flushes our cortisol levels. Have you heard that?
Yes. Yes.
That's the only thing. I mean, working out helps flush them, and certain activity helps flush them. But when you have an orgasm, your cortisol levels completely, that's your stress hormone, if you guys are familiar with. And just learning about things like that, just taking the time to study our bodies and how they work and use affirmations like, I am sexy. Sex is good. I love sex.
And so that's affirming. Just a whole, like, okay, we're married. We're quote unquote allowed to have sex now, but like, we're still not talking about it.
Right.
And it's still a bad thing to be sexy. I literally in the last maybe 2 months started like self-identifying as sexy.
Yes.
And that's not a bad word. It's not it's not like on the list of bad things about myself. Yeah. It's on like the list of like things that I like about myself. I am inherently sexy. And that does not mean that I'm like whatever, like, negative connotation you want to put to that. And, like,
right.
I love that you were, you, like, referenced that y'all are, like, your group is having, like, sex night. And I think that that's, like, so part of the problem is this dichotomy that we're presented with of keep things private. Some things are sacred. But it's, like, slash, you've got, like, you've got to walk in this with other people. Otherwise, you really are going to think that you are the only woman alive that doesn't want to have sex with her husband. Mm-hmm. You really are going
to
think.
Or you're the only woman alive that wants to have sex and he doesn't.
Yeah. Yes. Like, yes. Yeah. So it's this balance that we have to find of, like, I don't know. And I've had this conversation a lot recently of, like, when you're in a rough season with your husband, like, my husband and I just came out of, like, a really difficult season, and, like, we have been and are in counseling, and things are so much better now, but when they were really bad, I didn't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not allowed to talk bad about your husband.
Yep.
You know, and, like, I knew that my heart wasn't to talk bad about my husband. It was that we were struggling, and I needed help navigating that. But I feel like the same thing goes for sex. Like, we're just not allowed to talk about our sex lives. So we're navigating it completely alone.
Yep.
And I think that that
Which is
like,
awful, because that's where the church should be stepping in. There's so many areas where the church should be stepping in and saying, here's a safe place. Here is a place to land where you can sort through this with the guidance of Jesus. Right?
Who, like, God created sex, guys. Like, by the way, like, and I mean, we could, that's like a whole, I feel like there's so many, like, side conversations that we could have that would be episodes of their own, but, like,
yeah,
not just for procreation. Like, I'm going to throw that out there. Like,
no, we deserve to feel pleasure. God designed us for pleasure.
Exactly.
He could have made procreation.
There are parts of our bodies that would not exist.
Right.
If it was exclusively for procreation, guys.
If he could have put a button on our ankle that when it was time to procreate, but he didn't. He made it pleasurable. Yeah. So, yeah.
Start having the conversation. Like, even if you have to be the weird one in your group of friends that's like, hey, guys, can we talk about sex?
Trust me, you will not be the weird one. They will, like, clamor to come to your house and talk.
I, like, almost promise you that the response is going to be, oh, yes, please. Yes.
Yep.
Like, it may be uncomfortable at first, and it may be awkward at first, but, like, we say all the time on the show, like, God is in the uncomfortable and he is in the awkward, and I think he moves there so often. So, kind of like a natural segue from that is to talk about, like, the messages that we're hearing and that we're being taught.
Yeah.
From the church and from the world, which is something that you have detailed super well in your series. And so I'm really excited to kind of, like, hand you the mic and allow you to speak on that. And so you and I have similar stories of, like, growing up in the church, purity culture, hearing sex is bad, like, don't do it. And that almost, like, being the end of the conversation.
Basically,
like, very much not wanting to step into the gray area of, like, quote unquote, fooling around, not wanting to answer the question of, like, how far is too far.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you how many times, like, that question would be brought up in, like, youth group or even college ministry. And the answer would be like, check your heart. Basically, like, that's a heart. Oh, is it? Like, can we talk about the heart of that? Like, can we?
Right.
Can we not just get a one line answer? And so I think I would, like, let's break down, like, the message that the church is telling women pretty exclusively and the message that the world is telling women.
Okay. So I'll start with culture. Culture says YOLO.
Mm-hmm.
YOLO, it's your body, it's your life, it's your decision, which that's being said to men and women, but I think it's especially loud right now toward women.
Mm-hmm.
With the pro-choice movement and all of that. You know, it says if you're not using it, you're not fully living. You're holding yourself back. But there are a lot of reasons why that's unhealthy. It's unhealthy because of STD epidemic. Can anybody say that? Unplanned pregnancy, which those things lead to physical and emotional pain, trauma, depression in a lot of cases. So, mm-hmm. And as women, especially women, men too, but especially women, we are wired for connection as a result in sex. We're wired, we are physically, physiologically wired in our neural, to create neural pathways in our brain. When we are having sex, we create, specifically when we orgasm, we create new neural pathways to connect us to that person specifically. Mm-hmm. And when we're doing that over and over and over, the person may leave, but those connections don't leave. Mm-hmm. Our brain is literally wired to experience, to continue to go back to that. That's painful. That's trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's abandonment. That's why we feel these things. So it's just unhealthy. And, but sex sells. And that is basically the message that that culture is giving us. So mm-hmm. we have that end. And then we have the church who, like we said earlier, don't have sex, don't think about sex, don't talk about sex. And if you're a girl, don't tempt boys because it's your job to keep them pure. And I can't say that I know that this is what is still being taught to, you know, young children and preteens and teens today. I have no experience. I don't know. But I do know that there's a whole group of people that grew up that way.
A whole generation of women.
Yes. Yes. So does anyone remember church camp? Did you go to church camp, Blake?
I did.
Where you had, did, and the boys were all like over there playing basketball, shirtless and sweating and whatever. And the girls were all like in a corner somewhere with like their t-shirts down to their knees.
Yes.
And like, did you ever have to do that?
Yep. Yep.
So from like day one, we are told that our bodies are bad.
Yep.
Our bodies are to be shamed and covered.
Our bodies are the problem.
Our bodies are the problem. Yes. Our bodies will cause the boys to mess up. So we have to keep it all together. Because they're boys. Boys will be boys. And it's biological in them to just be that way. So you need to do what you need to do to, which is so, and I'm really not like a feminist. Like I am all about equality.
Yes.
Yes.
I am. But I will lose my crap about this with a quickness.
Oh, yes. It's just so unfair. And I feel so bad for like little Kirsten and little Blake who just, they didn't know. They just needed, we were so damaged from that. So. Mm. All the little girls. Oh, but yeah, so it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure for girls. But their intention was well-meaning, of course. No one was trying to cause trouble, but
I think it goes back to what we were saying about like not having the resources and like not knowing how to navigate that. Like I would imagine as a camp counselor, I don't know how to navigate that, like, these kids are hitting puberty.
Totally.
Body parts are changing. Right. Attraction is starting to happen. Put a t-shirt on. Fix it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, Cover it up. You know? And, like, I know that their intention was not to, like, stunt and shun and shame our sexuality. But, like, unintentional messages happen all the time. And that...
Mm-hmm.
Whether, I mean, I'm sure there are situations where it was, like, super intentional, but I don't think that on the majority it was. But you end up with a generation of women who don't know what to do with their sexuality, who feel exclusively responsible for being attractive or someone being attracted to you. Like, that is completely my fault. And we're missing such an important half of this conversation that like we have got to be having with our boys.
Yes. Yes.
Like there's a conversation to be had with both halves and I think together as well. But like I agree with you. I don't know like what's happening in youth group anymore. I'm mm-hmm. far out of that game and my girls aren't in it yet. Praise be. But like, mm-hmm. I would hope that conversation is changed on the boys' end, but, like, we have got to have some conversations about responsibility. We've got to have some conversations.
I was going to say, can you imagine the power of sitting down, boys and girls together, and talking about their what's going on in their bodies and humanizing it for each other.
Well, and then it's okay.
For the opposite sex. Right. It's okay.
But like attraction is okay. It is okay if you see a boy that you think is cute playing basketball shirtless all sweaty and you're like, "Who boy? All right."
Yeah. Yeah.
That is like so natural.
Let's talk about it. He's cute.
Right.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
Because then things aren't happening in the dark.
Right.
And like shame can't grow.
Right.
Essentially, like we eradicate if we have these conversations.
Right. That's like what I said, or what I touched on earlier. It's like whatever you hide, you're going to feel shame about, even if it's not inherently wrong, like thinking a boy is cute. But if you have to hide it, it's going to feel wrong.
Well, and like it's this natural chain of events. Like, let's take the camp example. You like girl sees boy, boy sees girl. They think each other are attractive. Something is like aroused in them. Let's put them at like an appropriate age, right? Like they're attracted to one another and they both feel safe enough to have conversations with people older than them. They both feel safe enough to say, I'm super attracted to so-and-so and like it makes me feel a certain kind of way and like I don't know what to do with that. And the person on the other side of that conversation says, yeah, I get it. Been there. I'm not going to say the 16-year-old boy is cute because, like, I don't want to go to jail. But, like, I get why you feel that way. And, like, here are some healthy ways to navigate that. God created that feeling that you're feeling right now. But I'm gonna tell you that, like, he intended the action that comes after it for when you're man and wife. And let me have a conversation with you about the damage that occurs if you act on that now.
Yep. 100%.
And like, honestly, not that difficult.
It's not. It's just having the courage to do it.
Yes.
It's having the courage to, because it is awkward. I can imagine.
It's awkward and it's humbling. Right. Like, to tell your story and that your story isn't perfect. But I will tell a million girls my side of that story if it saves them the pain and damage.
100%. Yep.
I'm gonna let you take the mic now because I just yelled for like 5 minutes.
No, I love it. I love it. I mean, so that's kind of the perfect segue into like we wound up there because no one talked to us about it. So how can we teach our children healthy sexuality? And you can from very early. There are very early age appropriate ways to to go there with them.
Teach us, Kirsten.
In girls, we need to stop shaming ASAP.
Yes.
If your four-year-old is touching her little parts down there, stop shaming. Like, it is a natural exploration of her body. It's the same. If her elbow felt a certain way when she touched it, she would touch her elbow, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is anatomy. This is, and we need to, explain the sacredness of those parts and the specialness that God created those parts with and the beauty of them. But stop the shaming. And it's hard to do. It's really hard. I didn't catch myself like, oh baby, no. You know, I have to like catch myself.
Yes.
and be intentional with how I'm communicating about that with her to not set the tone for her to hide it. Right. Because as soon as she starts hiding it, then that's when the shame comes in. Teach about how God made them and made their parts and where they come from and where those sensations come from, about how sacred their bodies are and not just that part, but all the parts. Like your whole body is sacred. It's not just about keeping certain things covered. It's you're a temple, you know, the Holy Spirit is in you. So I know this isn't for everybody, but I do encourage with littles, let them see your body. Let them see your naked body. Let them see you be okay with it. Let them see you be comfortable with it. And I let my girls ask questions about it and I answer them and I don't make it a thing. I make it very neutral because there's that line of like being neutral and also teaching sacredness and specialness, but it can totally be done. If we just sit with ourselves and allow ourselves to see the parts in our bodies as they really are.
Which so, that requires us to be okay and us to be comfortable and us to be. So, I mean, that may require some like working through lies and messages and shame of your own before you can step into that with your kids. But like, don't you want to save them not having to do the work when they're 30?
And you're going to find so much healing through that. Like,
yes.
If the motive is to raise your child a certain way, go for it. But you personally are going to experience so much freedom and weight lifted from going through that process yourself. And little things, like I've started rubbing my 4-year-old's feet at night and she started asking for it, and just like taking the time to do the little tickle her back and ask her what feels good and allow her to ask for things and tell me what feels good and what doesn't feel good. And learn them to acknowledge their senses, you know, their sensuality. They're a child. If you watch a child, you see sensuality all over them. I mean, think about the way a child like picks and smells a flower, you know, just like it's all encompassing to them. Or the way that they just like zone out when they're eating a chocolate chip cookie because all they can think about is
how good it is. You know, I do that sometimes too.
Guilty. But they're just they're wired for sensuality
because we all were,
and if we honor that in them, like they're not gonna lose it. Like you know, we have to allow them to not lose it by honoring it for them, and that will teach them to honor it. And I get, you know, give them permission to tell you what they like, what they don't like. If they say, you know, please do this. If they say, no, stop, like just honor those things. So those are like small age appropriate ways to teach healthy sexuality and like boundaries and how to say yes and no and communicate what those are ways that I've been working with my girls anyway. And boys, I think we need to allow them to feel. I think we need to allow them to stop saying, oh, suck it up, you're fine. And oh, man up, or grow some balls, or whatever. Like we just have this harshness toward boys and this expectation that they all have to be this like tough, you know, rough and tumble guy. Where they need to be allowed to sit in their feelings and their emotions and be able to communicate those things openly and with acceptance.
I just had this like light bulb of like in childhood, we're stunting girls' sexuality and men's emotions.
100%.
And we wonder why everything is a dumpster fire.
Yep.
like that's
women are taught that they need to shut their bodies down, and men are need to taught that they need to shut their emotions down.
My brain just exploded. Like that's 100% what it is and what we're doing. And that's why like things are so hard in adulthood.
We are completely incongruent with what it is happening.
Because and like then, what each other needs from the other is completely locked down and shut down.
In general. Yeah.
In general. Like as a generalization. Wow. Okay.
Isn't that nuts?
That is nuts.
So it's like we have to, you know, in marriage, we need to make our husbands feel safe to feel, and they need to help us feel safe physically.
Yes.
And if in the other way
and vice versa
too. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And it could be both. Like it could be like you both have been taught to shut your emotions and your sexuality down, because I think like somewhere along the lines, girls started getting the same message. Like if we want to keep up with the boys, then we got to shut it down.
Yep.
You know, and so I would say, like, looking across the aisle at my husband, like, we both have both. Right. We both have been stunted and shunned in our sexuality and in our emotions. Yeah. And that's 99% of, like, the issues that we ever encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a childhood message.
And I think with the feminist movement or the modern, you know, the modern feminist movement.
Yeah, not the true feminist movement.
Yeah, exactly. No, and I don't, because I don't want to bash feminism. I think it's amazing, but I think a lot of the unhealthy sides of it that we see, I think a lot of it is stemmed from exactly what you just said. Women are now being taught to shut down their emotions, to keep up with and surpass the men. And so now we're shutting our, our bodies and our emotions down. And no wonder, you know, things yeah. feel really, really hard. Which leads me to the idea that men have higher sex drives than women. That's always what we've been told. You know, they're just biologically wired. They can't help themselves.
What is it like? They think about sex like every 7 minutes or something right, crazy like right. that. Like,
to an average man, and like at least above the age of 21, and I—that's just not true.
No, they're thinking about like paying the bills and like yeah. when they get to go home. Like
right. But I mean, even studies are coming out now that women's sexual desire actually isn't any lower. It actually is a lot higher. It can be a lot higher mm-hmm. Than men's. But it's just because we've been shut down. It's just because we've shut it down and we haven't acknowledged it and we haven't honored it. And so we need to just eradicate this lie that women don't have sex drives and men have all the sex drives and we are just like slaves to their sex drives, because it's just not true. I think we just need to wake ourselves up and honor our own individual sexual makeup and desire. Yeah. And
well, because you know. I'm on the other side of that, where I do have a very high sex drive. I'm naturally very like sexually inclined and have always felt like there's something wrong with me that like even before I was married, like I was like, let's go, like let's roll, you know what I mean? And like that I could, in that sense, I could keep up with the boys, you
right,
know?
Right,
and
right,
like
right, right.
And then stepped into marriage and was like, what's wrong with me? Like I want to have sex all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then having conversations with my girlfriends and then being like, what? You right. enjoy it, you like, you initiate, and being like, well, I'm broken, something is
right.
wrong,
right,
you know what
right.
I mean? Like, so there is the other side of that that like, and circling back to the beginning of our conversation, if we were talking about it openly
yes.
and felt comfortable, then you can step into that and be like, oh no, I have my sex drive is way higher than my husband's, you're not weird, it's fine.
Right,
you
right,
know
right,
and like
right.
gosh, and then you can like join arms with one another, and the women who are that way can be like, let me just tell you the things that I do that make it awesome. Let
right.
me like let me help you step into it. Just fosters so much solidarity and community, and then like hopefully eventually better sex,
right? Right.
If we
and
talk
because,
about
yeah,
it
totally yes, and understanding for your husband, you know, and I think men aren't open. They feel uncomfortable being open about sex as well. I feel like
100%.
They should also be encouraged to talk about it with their dudes, because that side of it needs to be addressed as well. You know, we both
Absolutely.
Need to be talking about it, and then we need to be coming together and talking about it with each other as husband and wife. And
yes.
Sean and I have had the most breakthrough in our marriage or in our sex life because we've just talked about it, and it hasn't always been immediate, but there's always been like a freedom afterwards of like,
yes.
oh God, I'm so glad we talked about that. Even if it turned into a blow up fight or whatever. And then we came back down and settled into it.
Yes.
And there's just freedom in it at the end of it, being as open as possible, like scary open, like this might hurt them open,
mm-hmm.
but you have to be, you know?
Yes. Because it's in a like it's in an environment of love, and it's in an environment of wanting to grow together. And so that should hopefully in your marriage give you the space to say hard things
mm-hmm.
and know that they are like coming from a place of love.
Yeah. Yeah.
So completely obsessed with this conversation.
Me
this
too. Was... I could keep going.
I know. Okay. So we're at the end of the interview where we do our rapid fire questions. First one is, what is your Enneagram type?
I am a 4-wing-3.
Interesting.
So I go really, really deep, but I also care a lot about what people think.
So it's like, I want to be understood and I want to be the best at it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So something interesting I've been paying attention to is that in my cycle, I've been paying attention to my cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Menstrual cycle is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
In the first 2 weeks of, so like pre and during ovulation, I hover in my 3. I am like, let's go, let's do this. I'm social. I want to meet. I want to connect. I want to do. I want to master. And then in my second 2 weeks, I am so in my 4. Like
that is so
leading
funny.
Up to when I start my period, I am like, I want to be introverted and I want to write and I want to, it's like two very extremes.
I was going to say, like, I feel like you have to have a strong three wing.
I do have a very strong three. Sometimes I wonder if I am a three, but I have way too much four. And like the core motivation, core desire, core fear, I'm definitely a four. But anyway, I say that to, if you are into the Enneagram, pay attention, and you're a lady, pay attention to where you hover in your cycle, because it can be really helpful. If you're trying to write, if I'm trying to write and be like
creative,
I'm not going to do well in my first 2 weeks. I'm going to do well in my last 2 weeks. Yes. So if I'm trying to be a go-getter and meet people and connect, and I don't want to be socially awkward, I need to do that stuff
for the first 2 weeks. That is so interesting.
So yeah,
I definitely need to, like, because I'm an 8-wing 7.
Okay. Yep.
So
my husband's a 7-wing 8.
Oh, fun. We're so, real fun.
Yeah. You are.
I definitely know, like, I lean harder into one or the other, but I've never paid attention to it in, like, my cycle. Like, I can tell when I'm like, let's just have fun. Stop worrying. Stop being an adult. I just want to have fun. And then I can also tell when I'm like, let's get it done. Like, I'm gonna tell you what I think, even if you didn't ask. Like,
right.
So the 7-8 wing and the 8-wing 7s are so similar. Like, they're one of the most similar winging types, which is fun. The second one is, what is something that can always pull you out of a funk?
Okay, so I went to Tony Robbins' Unleash the Power Within. I don't know if you are familiar. I think everybody in this world should go. It's life-changing. But anyway, he talks of, he really, really, really majors on physiologically changing your state.
Yeah.
And being able to pull yourself out of the places that keep you from progressing or doing what it is you want to do. Or so priming is one thing. It's like meditation with affirmations and gratefulness, gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And then dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Dancing and moving your body. They do this at UPW. Dancing and moving your body is the number one way to change your what's chemically going on in your brain to bring you up.
I love it.
So
a good dance
party. I
have
like a couple go-to songs that I just like crank up and jam out and move on with my day.
I love it. It's so good. We're a big dance party family. So
yes, it's so
fun. I love it. And the last one is, what's the last thing you watched on TV?
Well, currently I'm actually rewatching The Office in my time that I watch when I'm watching something, and I'm appreciating it so much more than I did the first time. Like, I'm laughing out loud. I did not laugh out loud the first time I watched it. It makes me laugh out loud.
It's so
good. The Heal documentary. I don't know if you've watched the Heal documentary on Netflix, HEAL. It's fascinating. It kind of scientifically explains how prayer works.
Ooh.
It's really cool. It talks about, it's all about like using what you have to heal yourself of ailments. Some people might argue that it takes away from who God is. I think it just makes God more awesome and brilliant and shows how much he's actually given us. It's not a Christian documentary, but I made it a Christian documentary. Because I'm
like, I can make so anything cool about God. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I definitely want to check that out. Kirsten, thank you so much for, like, this is the most incredible interview. This was so fun. Tell
so
people where
fun
they can find and follow you to keep up with Sacred Sexuality.
Yeah, I am Kirsten P. Kelly on Instagram. And I will have a blog soon, but that's not up yet. So I'll keep everybody posted on that.
We'll link to all of that in your show notes, as always, so that people can find you, which you can find at crappychristianpodcast.com. Kirsten, thank you so much.
I had so much fun.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Confessions of a Crappy Christian podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast, and you can find the show notes and more information about the show at confessionsofacrappychristian.com. I'll see y'all next week. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex.
Me, but also you. The Pharaoh fast forwards his favorite foreign film, Powder Donut. Okay, what's my line?
The only line I see here on the script is get options based on your budget with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive.
Oh man, that's a tongue twister, huh? I'm sorry, I'm gonna need a few more minutes. Bulbous Walrus, the Bulbous Walrus.
The Name Your Price tool, only from Progressive.
The owl ran afoul of the comatose coxswain.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Start a rewarding new career right away. Giant Eagle has immediate openings for supermarket positions, including curbside roles, get-go positions, pharmacy technicians, and warehouse workers. To find your new job and get hired in as little as one day, visit jobs.gianteagle.com.